Here's a word I never thought I'd say in the radio. Sh-hole. Okay, I'm not actually allowed to say that. But by now, I'm sure you know the word I'm talking about. The vulgar one that President Trump reportedly used during a meeting about immigration Thursday evening. One of our big concerns here is that all the discussion about the word might be a distraction from what's actually playing out with immigration policy. So we want to start off with that news. Anjali Shah is a digital editor with our Global Nation desk, and she's on the line with me now from Minneapolis. Anjali, what was the intended purpose of the Thursday evening meeting?
Well, Trump was supposed to hash out a bipartisan proposal to preserve parts of the DACA program. It ended badly, and Trump rejected the bipartisan proposal entirely on Thursday.
And so that was Senators Durbin and Graham that brought him this compromise proposal. And do we know what was said that actually caused Trump to get frustrated and reportedly used that word, the vulgar one that we've been talking about?
So several reports say that they were trying to make a deal to exchange different immigration programs. Dick Durbin was explaining that they proposed to end one type of lottery, visa lottery, for people in different countries in exchange for continuing temporary protected status, another type of legal residence in this country, for people from El Salvador and others. And it seems that this proposal is what spurred Trump's outburst to say, why do we want to keep these people, or why do we want to invite these particular people into our country? And it seems from senators' accounts that this is what set Trump off, to use that word that has been reported.
Yeah, it's kind of odd because for at least a few days, it seemed like Trump was trying to really figure out a way to preserve the DACA legislation and get it passed. So what can we infer about what happened that's changed his mind?
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Carol. I mean, Tuesday he held a discussion open to the press with House and Senate members about immigration that touched on security and the DACA deal. In it, he hedged a little bit about what he was willing to do in order to pass a DACA-related bill. He said that he wanted money for a southern border wall, but he hedged. He said he could do it less than he originally proposed, that it wouldn't have to go across the entire southern border wall. And these were relatively new sort of rhetoric from the president. But I think it's clear that in closed-door meetings between himself, members of his own party, and Democrats, there were disagreements about what is acceptable to include with a DACA-related bill.
Are there any guesses on what's most likely to come out of all this?
That's a really difficult question, Carol. I mean, in a lot of ways, we've been at a stalemate on discussions about immigration for years, for decades. So I wish I could take a guess, but it's really difficult to predict how Trump's rhetoric will change, how his policies will change, and what this particular Congress will do, given the pressure that they have from their constituents.
Anjali Shah is a digital editor with our Global Nation desk. And we're going to come back to you, Anjali, in a couple minutes. But first, we want to hear from someone who's going to be directly impacted by whatever ends up happening with the DACA program.
To me, watching and hearing all of the different updates in terms of DACA and immigration on the news and on social media, it's overwhelming because things change by the hour. And so to be living in that uncertainty every single day is exhausting.
Itzel Guillen is a DACA recipient. She's in San Diego, where she works with an immigration advocacy group.
I came to the U.S. I'm originally from Mexico City when I was 5 years old. I've been living in San Diego County my entire life since then, close to 20 years. I graduated from San Diego State University this May 2017. And I've been working, serving the immigrant community here with Alliance San Diego for almost 5 years.
And what impact did the DACA program have on you?
It changed my life completely. I had just recently graduated high school. I was still undocumented. And so for me, it was not knowing what was going to be next. I knew I wanted to go to college, but I knew I didn't have the financial means to do so. I knew that I was going to have to struggle getting to school because I would have to drive, or finding a job because I would have to figure out some sort of way to work without proper documents. So when DACA was announced in 2012, it was a gift sent from above to me because it allowed me to apply to work to become an independent person and be able to provide for myself and help my family while also giving them that protection of my driver's license and not putting my family at risk to having them to drive all the time as well.
How old were you when you found out you were undocumented?
I won't say I found out at some age. I think I always knew that there was something different, even as a kid. I remember being afraid of my mom not coming home from grocery shopping or from work. I would freak out if I didn't hear her keys at a certain time, or I would be calling her. So I always knew there was something different about us, but I don't think I understood what it meant to be undocumented and the limitations that I would have to face until I was in high school.
What's at stake for you if Congress and the White House can't reach a deal before the deadline in March?
My life would be severely impacted. I would lose my ability to work and to do what I love. And so I know that for many of us, that's what's at stake, our livelihoods and our careers and generally our safety, especially here in the border region. Without that protection from DACA, we will be subjected to the deportation machine that's already here in our communities.
When does your own status expire?
I am protected until 2019.
So even if the March deadline comes and goes, you're staying put?
Until further notice. But, you know, every single day, 122 of us are losing our permits. So it's definitely happening every single day throughout the country.
Now, the compromise package that Senators Durbin and Graham discussed with President Trump last evening, they reportedly included $2.7 billion for border security, as well as a path to citizenship for DACA recipients. Of course, that whole deal seems to be off the table for the moment, at least. But what would you like to see in a final bill if they can come to an agreement on one?
I would definitely like to see a bill that does not include border militarization. I don't think that tying all of the border enforcement to this, to DACA, a protection for DACA recipients, is a response, because our lives here in the border region differ vastly than that of the rest of the country. We are subject to seeing Border Patrol agents near our grocery stores, near schools and our communities, everywhere. So people live in fear here already. That's why I advocate for a Clean Dream Act.
Itzel Guillen is a DACA recipient and immigration advocate in San Diego. Thanks, Itzel.
Thank you so much.
Our Global Nation editor, Anjali Shah, is still here with me. Anjali, as we just heard, what happens with this immigration deal and the talks the president just had last evening could really affect people's lives and the nation's immigration policy. You've been looking at this issue for a long time. What strikes you about what the president seems to want to do?
I think one thing that it's always helpful to constantly reiterate is that we have an immigration law called the Immigration and Naturalization Act of 1965, which explicitly prevents race-based discrimination in our immigration system. And I think it's really important to keep that in mind. And it's possible that, you know, Trump, in his comments, does not quite understand the basis of that law.
So, Anjali, what is the Immigration and Naturalization Act of 1965?
It's a law that was passed to prevent discrimination in our immigration system. It was explicitly created to end race-based immigration system. It sets country-based quotas for the issuance of visas. So it says by country, only a certain number of people can come into this country. It prioritizes the skills of the immigrant and their family connections in the United States instead of their race, for example.
How did this law come about?
So the immigration history of the United States is such an interesting and complicated thing, but the basis of it is when this country had its first immigration law, the Naturalization Act of 1790, to become a citizen of the United States, you had to be a free white person. So it excluded Native Americans, free African American slaves at the time, indentured servants, it excluded Asian immigrants. And through time, until 1965, we had a series of discriminatory laws that often were explicitly passed in order to preserve the ethnic makeup of the United States, to favor Western European immigrants. With the civil rights movement, though, by 1965, there were also movements to fight for civil rights and immigration, and the Immigration and Naturalization Act was the result of some of those fights.
And how has that act shaped the makeup of who immigrates to the U.S. now?
So from changing to a race-based immigration system to a system that prefers entrance on the basis of skills and family connections over time brought more people from Central and South America, from Asia, from different countries across Africa. It brought greater diversity, racial diversity, into this country.
So is the Immigration and Naturalization Act of 1965 here to stay, or can Trump change it or get rid of it?
I don't have a crystal ball for that, but if Trump's goal is to upend our immigration system, to change it to a merit-based system, as he says, then he's going to need comprehensive immigration reform. He said in many ways that he supports a merit-based immigration system instead of a family-based one. But given how up and down the talks went this week, I really can't guess if comprehensive reform is possible with this president and with this Congress.
Anjali Shah, our Global Nation editor, speaking to us from Minneapolis. Thanks, Anjali.
Thank you.
The politics around immigration policy are not new, of course. And as we've been hearing, there's a lot at stake for a lot of people. But it's hard to ignore all the hullabaloo around the vulgar term that President Trump reportedly used last night.
Mr. President, will you give an apology for the statement yesterday?
Mr. President, did you refer to African Asians?
There's that word again, this time from reporters shouting questions at the president after an event at the White House today. But you're not going to hear me say that word on our show. And that was an editorial decision. To explain why, here's our show editor, William Troop. William, what's behind the decision?
Well, first of all, I want everyone to know that we've been discussing this in the newsroom pretty much all day since we heard about the reported statement from President Trump. There's a few reasons why we decided to go this way today. We wanted to focus on the substantive issues and not so much focus on the vulgarity itself. I'm sure everyone has been seeing how other news outlets have decided to go different ways. Some have used the word, some have not. We just wanted to focus on the issues, as I hope people have been hearing today on the show.
How about our website? Will you see the word there?
Yeah, the word will appear on some of our digital content at PRI.org. But also, you know, this is a really tricky area, and we'd welcome to hear from what everybody listening out there thinks. If you have thoughts on this, just tweet at us at PRI The World, or head over to Facebook and drop us a message. Just search for PRI The World.
Thanks, William.
You're welcome.